on a minute, everybody. We've hit a technical snag. John's still muted as well. Hello, John.
Hello.
You were coughing all the way through that intro.
I know. Got a tickly throat.
Well, there we go. I'm still recovering from Dodmaster. This is the problem. My fingers aren't where they should be, so to speak. Anyway.
We left that humour behind on Friday night, yeah. Young man.
I'm going to have to make this a nice clean start now, otherwise it's going to be horrendous to edit for the audio podcast.
Yep.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast, brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. I am Cammy Black. My fingers are not in, they're here. Look, just to reassure all our viewers at home. We're calling these our Lions special podcasts over the next kind of month and a bit, because unlike last time there was a Lions tour, we're actually going to talk about the Lions and not anything but the Lions, which is quite exciting because there are Scottish players in the Lions. And joining me this evening, a man who once talked about a cruise with, who was it? Was it Michael Ball or John Virgo? I think it was John we found a cruise with 4 years ago to talk about instead of the Lions.
We did, yes. I mean, let's be honest, the quality of the part of last 4 years ago was outstanding. There was some seriously good stuff. My particular highlight was the Lion Tamer episode where we learned how to be Lion Tamers, which was quite good.
That was, of course we did that, yes.
That was great. That was upskilling. Like, now I know how to face a lion.
Can you remember any of it?
No, but like, it's in there somewhere. Like, I think if
one of them was definitely do not look the lion directly in the eyes.
See, I was thinking it was looking them in the eyes. I think we're probably gonna be.
I don't think it's not, nothing stuck with me, John. So I'm not about to climb into a cage with a lion. Speaking of lions, though, we've got two lions with not actual lions. Lions of chat, let's call them that.
Wow, I've never been described as that. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's it.
So we've got Craig Manson with us. Hello, Craig.
Hi, all. How you doing?
And joining us, star of Dodmaster, although he did come in last place.
it's second last place.
Second last place, sorry. Naked Sam came last, didn't he?
I think Robbie came last.
No, he did. Yeah. You're right. Robbie did come last.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've got Johnny McGinty. Good evening, Johnny.
Hello, good evening.
Yes. We've got a bit to get through this evening. If you are watching us, you can watch us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, and Twitter. If you're watching live, get involved in the comments. We've already got a couple coming already. Hello to Andy Lone. Good evening, Andy. And also, I think it's Alan McDonald who's lurking around, although he hasn't registered on Facebook to give us his name, but he says John needs a swab.
We need to have a word with Alan and get him sorted, because his patter on Friday was really good, but he obviously just got credit as generic Facebook user, which, you know, I want more for him.
Yeah, you need to click on the button, Alan, that gives Facebook permission to share your username with us. Otherwise, you're just going to be generic Facebook user all night.
That's where I went wrong then, I guess.
Yeah, I was thinking
I commented a couple of times and I was generic Facebook user. Maybe I should do that.
Cammy had given a user guide at one point to get everybody in the correct setup, but maybe we need to do a refresher course, Cam.
We'll do. We'll send that out to our patrons. Speaking of our patrons, and that's where Alan is speaking to us from, which is why he's down as generic Facebook user. If you sign up to our Patreon, patreon.com/Scottish Rugby Podcast, for £3 a month, you get access to our secret Facebook page. You get access to exclusive content and episodes later this month. Is it? No, it's not July yet. July tomorrow, isn't it?
July tomorrow.
So next month, as we record this, but this month, as you're probably listening to this, we're going to do a special on the greatest ever Scottish Lions. So me and John are going to have to do a wee bit of research for that. And we also give you ad-free versions of the audio podcast. And you get a wee mini podcast as well, where we cut out me talking about what I'm doing with my fingers off camera and stuff like that, and just focus purely on the rugby. We are also sponsored by Manscaped. This is I think this is going to be our last Manscaped podcast.
Is it?
John.
Oh,
so pour one out for the gentleman grooming products.
Here.
And so, here is me. I was going to invest in some gentleman products as well, gentleman grooming products
I know.
And maybe we need to continue their sponsorship.
Maybe if you do that, they'll continue.
That's what we need to do. If you want to, then if you go to manscaped.com/ScottishRugby or go to manscaped.com and put the code SRP in at the checkout, you get 20% off plus free shipping on a range of gentlemen's grooming products. I think that will still be going tomorrow. If it doesn't work at the checkout, then we're no longer sponsored by Manscaped. If it does work, it'll persuade them to extend the sponsorship for another month, which would be lovely, obviously. Nice. And then you have to put up, or maybe, I don't know, it'll depend. Maybe people don't like this bit of the podcast where we talk about our grooming regimes, John.
Do you know, I think it's been a mixed bag. I think we've had a lot of
is bag the right word or sack?
I mean, your mind is obviously in the gutter, Mr. Cam.
My mother listens to this podcast.
Absolutely. No, I think it's been good. We've talked about some serious issues as well. You know, we have raised some issues around kind of testicular health. We've talked about how Manscaped do support testicular charities as well. So it's been a bit of fun. We've enjoyed ourselves.
And we never got to the bottom of whether or not grooming downstairs or even shaving your legs improves athletic performance. Johnny, do you shave for performance?
More for aesthetic than performance, if I'm honest.
Certainly isn't performance.
No, do you know what? I've got quite hairy legs, and I've never figured that I might reduce my drag. You never know. It might make that half a second of difference. Catch me up, Craig.
Certainly, if he does shave his legs, he might be able to be a drag.
Very good. I think it does seem more of a back sting.
Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's rules against it. If you're a forward and you go down that route of kind of that regime, I think there probably is a lot of props out there with awards for that sort of thing. And I say award in the loosest possible way. Probably horrible pints have been consumed.
Fines
have been given. Yeah, we do a section on the podcast. We haven't had any for a while. Speaking of fines, of crap call offs, and now that training's back on, and now that we're approaching the new season, we invite anybody to name and shame fellow players, coaches, committee members, even, who've given rubbish reasons for calling off games, meetings, training. So get in touch. I understand Johnny's cried off training tonight to do a podcast, for example.
Well, yeah.
I'm torn as to whether that's crap or not.
You've said you're retired about five or six times so far, though, Craig.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's lovely. You know, obviously it's lovely to have you here, Johnny, so I'm not going to class that as a crap call off. So in terms of news, there's nothing kind of, we're probably just kind of worth launching straight into the Lions. Should we do the jingle?
Oh yes.
Yes, please.
Let's do the jingle.
It's the Legally Mandated Lions Chat. The Legally Mandated Lions Chat. We've heard so much about it that it makes us sick, but we've still got a chat about who Gatlin's gonna pick.
Yes, it's Legally Mandated Lions Chat. We have to talk about the Lions because it is Lions that time every 4 years where it comes around. Should we deal with the news first and then we'll go on and talk about the game? That kind of probably works its way out. Obviously, Alwyn Jones and are both injured and their tours are over. So Connor Murray is now the Lions captain. I don't know. I'm going to come to you first, Craig, as a forward. As captains, and particularly Lions captains going to South Africa. I mean, you know, famously Martin Johnson was chosen as captain in 97 because Ian McGeachan wanted an imposing physical presence. I'm not sure that Connor Murray's up to, I don't know, physically intimidating Eben Estevan.
No, I don't think so. I think though, however, and I've seen a lot of differing opinions on the subject over the last few weeks. But for me, I think that he's saying that he's going to be helped by the leadership group that he has. He has such a lot of strong leaders in the group anyway. So I think that's how he's going to work it. But I think also someone who's been a tourist for the third time, I think he is. he's one of those players, I think, that's been in the background of everyone saying, nah, there's no chance Conor Murray would ever be captain. And you never talk about him. And then all of a sudden, as Gatland usually does, he's surprised. He comes out the cupboard with somebody something new, and there he is. It's Conor Murray. But I think he'll do a good job. I think any Lions captain that's chosen, I don't really remember any Lions captain that's been not very good. So I think he's got experience, and I think he'll do a good job, I hope.
Obviously, Johnny, he's going to be in and around and near the referee at breakdown, so he's in a position to talk to him. You're an advocate, though, of the fullback as the captain. I know there's a certain personal interest there. Is Hoggy unlucky because he's maybe the only other one of the other players that's guaranteed, or certainly probably guaranteed, a start? Has Johnny frozen?
Johnny has frozen.
Or is he lost in thought?
I froze very quickly, very briefly. No, I don't know if he's unlucky. He was a contender, but there was probably three or four really, really obvious contenders, and you can see why you wouldn't have him, because he is a bit further away. Like, there's no getting away from it. He's further back from the action, because it's probably, you're looking at him, Murray, Itoje, or Ken Owens would have been the options. And he is the furthest away. There's no way around that. He probably is the best at speaking to the referee of the four of them. But then you've got to balance out the fact that he's got to come all the way from fullback to speak to him. So.
And it depends on the referee, doesn't it? Because we saw that, I think, for Scotland, John, that at times the referees were happy to speak to the leader of the forwards.
Yep.
Fraser Brown was kind of fulfilling that role. And then there was, I can't remember what game it was, where the referee insisted that he jog 50 yards up the pitch to come and have a chat.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because as you say, it's down to interpretation. The captain should always be given the opportunity to come and speak. But as you're saying, it's more about will a ref allow the wider leadership group to talk? You would hope in that situation they would, but I think it's the fullback at captain thing. Sorry, Johnny. It's just not for me. But then scrum half as captain's not for me either. So
yeah,
I'm a Bodden Snorters second row for captain.
It's interesting. You raised Maro Itoje there, Johnny, and that's interesting, I think, because there's certainly been some chat. Obviously, you feel for the marketing guys that have had to go and kind of shift all their branding and everything that they've got set up for the tour. Presumably, Sky are frantically photoshopping Conor Murray's head onto Alan Wynne-Jones's shoulders and stuff for all the images. But, Alan Wynne-Jones is maybe a player that permeates outside of rugby. Maro Itoje certainly is. Stuart Hogg, maybe. But I don't know that Conor Murray is, like, unless you're Irish, but I don't know it in the wider outside of rugby.
I tested this theory on my wife earlier on, because she does watch rugby. She watches like probably as much as me. Doesn't consume it to like the Nos-like level that I do, but I showed her a picture of Alan Wynne-Jones and a picture of Conor Murray this afternoon. And when I said, who's that? She looked at the picture of Alan Wynne and was like, it's Alan Wynne-Jones. Like, even seemed kind of confused that I'd even ask her. And then I showed her Conor Murray and said, who's that? She said, I've got no idea.
Did you, though, show her Conor Murray's standing leg? Because at that point, everyone recognises him.
She did, to be fair, she did say if he'd had his Ireland kit or his Lions kit on, she probably would have known who he was. But it was just a random picture and she had no idea.
Yeah.
And she's not like a total, knows nothing about rugby, has no interest. She watches all the games, watches all the Six Nations, watches most of the Pro 14. But like, identified Alan Wynne straight away and Conor Murray, she's just like, yeah, I don't know. So
I wonder why, though. I mean, that they haven't gone with Itoje, though, Craig, because that would have been my automatic choice. Everyone was talking about him beforehand, and I know he's not had captaincy experience with England or Saracens, but that's never stopped Lions captains before, and it hasn't stopped them with Conor Murray, certainly. And he's got that physical presence. He's probably one of your nailed on test starters already. It's maybe surprising that they haven't gone with him.
I think on my side of things, I feel that you're looking at a cat in Itoje. First of all, he is an absolute, how can I put it? He is incredibly, I'm trying to put it politely and not swear, but he can be really in your face, and he can be a nose, and he can be a real pain in the backside to and also turn the game out, the referee against the team that he's playing for. So there is that concern. Connor Murray just is exactly the same as I told you to be when it comes to no captaincy experience, etc. But I think I told you a mixture of that, plus he's only been in camp for a certain amount of time. He's not been in camp as long as Connor Murray. So for me, I would have thought Connor Murray's got more of a chance if he's got everybody on board already. That's probably the reason that they've gone down that route. Okay, fair enough. I'm very much plus. I think he's going to do a great job, but I'm not a fan of a nine as your captain anyway, because I'm fed up listening to them.
it was telling, actually, that when Alamin went off, it wasn't Conor Murray who took up the captaincy. It was Ken Owens.
Yeah.
And that would have been my choice. Like, that was, for me, that was a no-brainer. He's got captaincy experience. He's a leader.
He's Murray, Ken the Sheriff. You can't stick Ken on a poster, though. Maybe that's what came into it.
That's true, actually. Yeah, maybe it is the market. Although with a mask on, it would
be very interesting to hear him in a press conference, though.
True.
It's, I mean, the one worry, I suppose, from a Scottish perspective, John, is, you know, where does this leave Ali Price? Because, you know, we've all been talking up his chances, saying he was the form British and Irish nine coming out of the Six Nations. Conor Murray's maybe getting past it a little bit, but you know, how easy is it to drop your captain?
Well, that's absolutely it. I mean, Gatland does have previous on it, but you would expect that you pick a captain based on the idea that they should be a nailed on test starter. And I think it's a real shame for Ali Price, because Conor Murray was awful on Saturday. I really, really hate watching Conor Murray. Admittedly, he's playing a game plan. It's just so dull. And you've got all that attacking talent outside him, and he's just kicking it in the air. Come on. So, I mean, and Ali Price didn't do much when he came on, but, you know, it was 20 minutes, and Japan were rampant by that point. So, I think... Do you know what? I think Murray is now nailed on, and like Gatland's obviously, he's chose that hill to go and rest upon. So we'll see how it pans out.
Yeah, speaking of the Scottish players' performances at the weekend, obviously Xander Ferguson was a late call off. Hamish Watson was out with concussion, so we had Doohan and Rory Sutherland on the starting 15 and Ali Price off the bench. So Andy Lowen says, I thought Rory Sutherland and Doohan van der Meer were played well last Saturday, and hoping they get run out with Xander this Saturday. Johnny, you were actually at the match. You were lucky for you. From your position in the stands, how did you feel that Sutherland and van der Meer went?
I was instantly impressed with Suz. I thought he had a really good game. There was a moment as well where the Lions had a line out, and he was kind of biting a little bit at his opposite number, because his opposite number wasn't keeping space, and Suz just turned around a couple of times and shoved him. So it's nice to see a bit of fire from him. Doohan got a lot of stick for his positioning and the way he was giving Matsushima the outside, and people obviously saying, you know, you can't do that to Matsushima, and you definitely can't do it to Colby. But I watched, and he was really narrow, and he seemed quite flat-footed against Matsushima outside, but he was doing it every single time. Now, you don't get to be a professional player, let alone an international, and certainly not a Lion, if you're making what looks like that simple a positioning mistake every single time. So I think, we obviously don't know what the game plan is and what the defensive strategy was, but I could only assume that he was told to play like that, because it was literally, a couple of people have said, oh, two or three times I've seen Doohan give the outside up to Matsushima and he's just going to burn him. And I was looking, and it was almost every single time. So I think, rather than it being a mistake that Doohan was making, I think it was part of the game plan. It can only have been.
Yeah, someone pointed this out in the comments on our super secret Facebook page. It was Gordon McCracken said, that kind of space isn't going to be down to the actions of a single player, and whenever the Japanese tried to utilise it, Doohan shoved them into touch or made a tackle anyway. People are going to say, oh, well, the Springboks will utilise the space better. The player Doohan was opposite was Matsushima. He's not some no-name aperture. If there was space, he'd have taken it. I think that's probably... I think you're right, Johnny. I think if Doohan was positioning was wrong, then the person outside or inside of him is going to be shoving him out and telling him to fill the space in. Nobody inside of him is going to be saying, oh, you're all right there, if he's not.
Yeah.
So,
and he always defends like that. And Scotland have come up against good wingers since him and Steve Tandy have been in, and they haven't conceded a lot of tries. So it's pretty much, I would say, nailed on that that's the way that they're playing to defend. I don't think that Doohan is making a mistake. I think he's been told to play like that.
There was an interview with Steve Tandy, or I don't think it was Steve Tandy. I think it was Jamie Lyle had gone and spoken on Rugby Pass, had gone and spoken to different people who have worked with Steve Tandy over the years, Craig. And one of the things they talked about is Steve Tandy's got this idea of zonal defence rather than for your man. So you wonder whether that's kind of what was in play there, that rather than winger standing on the wing up against his opposite number, Doohan's been given a zone to defend, which is between him and the touchline, and he can make that zone as big as he feels he can afford to and still be able to catch his guy or turn on his heels and push him in touch.
It's definitely, just as Johnny said, it's surely got to be a game plan of some kind. And every time, every time Matsushima came out to him, he had him. Yep. So I think it's almost an invitation. If you've got someone, for example, if you're coming up against Rhys Sammet or you're coming up against Colby, you're almost inviting them, there's your space, use it. And you've got them covered. And then you've got the ball turned over to your ball again. If you can get them into touch, or you get yourself a turnover against them, which Doohan is very, very strong over the ball as well. So I can only agree on that one. I can only say that I think that's the plan. And Tandy is very, very set on his plan of his defence, but I think it's done wonders for Scotland, and I think I'm hoping it's going to do the job for the Lions.
Yeah, it was interesting in attack as well, John, with Doohan, that he went looking for a lot of work. That's how he got his try, when he kind of,
yep,
bit of a poach at the back of the ruck, and away he went. That he's obviously been given permission to do that, you would assume.
Yeah, absolutely. It was smart heads up rugby, but I think what has been lost in a lot of translation is the power of work he's put in beforehand, because despite the commentator's insistence that it was Mr. Williams carrying, Doohan's put a huge carry up on the left wing before tracking the whole length of the park to get round and score the try. So his work rate was phenomenal, and it was great to see him looking for ball. It was great to see him taking defenders in, and it's the sort of physical, when you've got centres who maybe aren't, like, say, for example, you've got maybe a Farrell playing, you're not going to see that crash ball from him. I mean, as funny as it would be, it would be beautiful. Kind of want to see it, but a big guy like Doohan going looking for work, engaging some of the South African defenders, it can only be a good thing. And I totally, totally agree with you guys. It is clearly a game plan. It was happening on the other wing as well, which people conveniently forgot. So.
Yeah, I guess I'll ask you this, and I'm going to move on to something else, Craig. But how does that feel watching Doohan go and do work, and being given permission to do that, Craig, compared to how he's utilised at Edinburgh? And that's not a dig, by the way. It's an invitation to kind of talk about, the limitations of Edinburgh's attack strategy, I guess.
Oh, yeah, but then he has been doing a lot of this with Edinburgh over the last couple of seasons. He has been looking for the ball. But I think it's because he has to go looking for the ball, because if he continues to be the standard winger who's standing outside, hands in the pocket, freezing cold because he's not getting the ball, he's there to impress. He's had his second chance with Edinburgh, and he's taken it. Now he's got this chance with the Lions, and he wants to be in the test team, because obviously he's no disrespect to him, because he's worth the money, but he's looking for his payday, because he's been struggling to get the payday with all of his injuries, etc., and all the problems he's had when he was in South Africa. So I think he's driven for the more he has the ball in hand, the more strength he shows, the more yards he gains or meters he gains, the more he is making Worcester Warriors look like they've spent very, very good money.
Yeah, there was a lovely video, Johnny, of him talking about how much it means to him to play for the Lions and his journey the Lions had put up, where he kind of almost breaks down halfway through. And I suppose you know, we're a relatively woke bunch, so I think we're more alert to the issues of people choosing different nationalities, and we're sympathetic to that. But for to see him react like that was, it was a difficult watch, actually, I suppose, to kind of see someone kind of respond directly to the criticism they've had.
It was, and it was really nice. Like, he deserves this shot. He's been great since he came in, and we've all been counting the days for him to get into the Scotland team. And then to see him progress so quickly into the Lions, I think is absolutely brilliant. And I just don't understand where people get off with that sort of thing. And it's the same, you know, it's the exact same sort of thing that Bundy Aki gets. And he, I think he deserves it every bit as much as Doohan does. I think it's great to see them. And it was really, really nice to see him react and just to say, like, it means so much to him, because it obviously does. And it's great. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. Ali Price, John, you mentioned, obviously got 20 minutes off the bench.
Yep.
Maybe a shame he didn't get a little bit longer, because I didn't think Corey Murray had a great game early on. There's a couple of wee kind of mistakes, and I think he was lucky that Bigger was able to clear at one point.
Yeah, I mean, if you do the classic forensic analysis that Scottish players tend to face in these areas, I mean, he got charged down, so he's now the worst scrum half in the world. You know, he maybe wasn't leading his troops as fast and getting the ball away as quickly as he could have. His box kicks weren't as contestable as they could have been. Do you know, I thought he had a poor game, but that's... I always think he has a poor game because I hate him. But that's just me. And do you know what? I will take the abuse for that. I don't care. I was surprised Price didn't get a wee bit longer, but then there was an element of Japan coming back into the game at that point, and I think there might have been... With them losing Tipperick and Alwyn so early, the front row had been changed or was in the process of being changed at that point. So I think there was maybe just an element of let's steady things a wee bit and then get Price on. But, I mean, it didn't steady that much. It was fairly poor at that point.
Yeah. Do you get, John, do you get a sense of how the Lions might be playing? Do you think, or was that kind of very much a, let's just kind of throw some lads on the pitch and see how it goes kind of against Japan?
I really hope it's not how the Lions are going to play, because, I really, really loathe the box kicking game that has a purpose. And we've talked about it at length, you know, good box kicks are worth their weight. But when you've got that level of talent, you've got that pack, you've got a Japanese team who, you know, every time you made progress, you broke the game line when you put the ball through the hands. It'll be interesting to see when they come up against maybe some of the provincial sides how they go about things. I really hope it's not how they're going to play, but naming Murray as captain, I think it is how they're going to play, and I'm going to weep into my own brew.
Ah, but to be honest, what you've just been saying, you've been talking about over the last couple of things about Ali, about Conor Murray, you could very much label that with Ali Price as well. He's a box kicker. He makes a few mistakes. You know, I think, you know, fair enough, he steadied himself a little, but he's gone from the sort of George Horn, fire and brimstone, make big howlers mistakes as well as some phenomenal play. And Townsend has chipped a little bit of the corners off him. But Ali Price is very, you know, you look at the game that the England game where, you know, he got charged down twice with his box kicks, etc. So I'm going to say this, and Johnny's going to start beating his chest and be upset with me, but you could almost see Ali Price is in a similar mould to Conor Murray, and he makes the same mistakes, I feel personally.
Yeah. Could you, I mean, sometimes, Johnny, when you're in the stadium, you can get a better idea of the kind of shape that the teams are forming, how they're lining up and how they're kind of taking things in. Was there a kind of sense of cohesion, or did it still kind of everything still look a little bit ring rusty from where you were sat?
I don't think they did anything particularly complex. So what they were doing looked pretty crisp, but I don't think they were deep in the playbook, to be honest. I don't think we learned much at the weekend that we didn't already know. Like, we know that Dan Bigger's a test player, and the way that he controlled the game was what I would kind of expect from him. I think we learned that Tadhg Byrne for sure is a test player at the weekend, because he was phenomenal. The way they used him, I expect, will be the way they'll try and use him once they get to South Africa, because he was popping up, obviously, apart from his try, he was popping up in midfield quite a lot, and his carries were phenomenal. I wouldn't say that they were at full throttle on Saturday, put it that way.
Yeah.
I think they were working through the first few pages.
That's maybe quite exciting in a way, like you said, because it's hard, I think, with this Lions squad, although I think maybe we have to put up with quite a lot of slings and arrows as Scotland fans, that our guys are going to be talked down by the media because we don't have a stronger a rugby media in Scotland as they do elsewhere. But this Lions tour in particular, Craig, feels less like you could kind of pick the starting 15 at this stage, whereas in I think the last two, maybe you could start to kind of piece it together or see where the things might lie. It feels all positions feel up in the air, maybe.
I think there's definitely a few nailed on, but certainly things like fullback, centres, etc. Bundiaki showed his talent during the game. I thought he carried incredibly well and proved and kind of was playing the Gatland ball style, wanting the strong centre to rattle up, even though he was outside centre rather than inside centre. Or was he inside centre? I'm just trying to think. I'm trying to find mixed
he was
that
inside,
up.
I think.
He was inside centre. Definitely, I think there's a few surprises to be in there. But that's if they get to play their provincial games and throw all these different players in. It'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, the latest news is there is no news. Apart from the South Africa in a further lockdown, but professional sport has been allowed to continue. The suggestion is that they're going to play their test games all in one place, and perhaps even the provincial games in one place as well. Mm. I think the thing that's been slightly frustrating with the reporting, and this is why, you know, I think this is true of any time that you send a sports reporter out to a former colony, is you get this kind of colonial attitude of they don't know what they're doing out here in South Africa with COVID. And it's like, well, you know, they know as well as, you know, the UK does. I mean, you know, I know that the reporting maybe isn't up to the same standard as England, but certainly they've had less cases. The vaccination programs aren't at the same stat, you know, at the same place as it is in the UK, but we're at much of a risk, I think, in the UK as it is in South Africa. And it's frustrating, I think, when you see everybody panicking and people saying things like, oh, the Lions 2 is definitely not going ahead, because they're out there now and it's, you know, there will be some form of tour.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It kind of feels a little bit, it's like a kind of a throwback to the colonial past, John, that kind of like, oh, these poor people down in South Africa don't know what they're doing and it's not going to go ahead. Where actually, you know, the pro sport's going to go ahead. So in one form or another, we're going to get a Lions tour. I don't think it's going to be just the three tests. Whether it's all provincial matches is another thing, but we are going to get this tour.
Yeah, I think we absolutely are. And, you know, people's concern for the tour, I think you're absolutely right, could be rooted in some form of, will we say racism? Let's go racism. let's go for it. I mean, look, people who are maybe looking at South Africa and saying, oh yeah, they're not up to scratch, are forgetting that this is actually the British and Irish Lions is kind of a global brand. There's global partners who are very interested in making sure this goes ahead. There's lots of people collaborating across the world to make sure these sporting events take place in some form, safely or otherwise. So it's very narrow-minded to think that it's just South Africa's healthcare system's mince and we're all going to get COVID from it. You know, it's just stupid.
Yeah. Andy Lone suggesting all games and all tests are going to be played in Cape Town because of the rise in COVID, which seems like a fair plan. Maybe some of the players will be cursing Johnny that they've had to ride on watt bikes with like gas masks strapped to their face to reproduce altitude when they might not have had to.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the end of the world though if they moved it all to Cape Town, given that we saw Cheslin Colby kick a 50-metre drop goal at the weekend. And Franz Steen and Andre Pollard have obviously both got a huge boot as well. So if we're going to go out and like John says, box kick to them, and we're suddenly now not having to play two games at altitude, that's a pretty good thing, because we don't want these enormous boots coming back at 2,000 metres or wherever it is Joburg's at, because we're going to find ourselves pinned in the goal line almost instantly. So let's get down to Cape Town and take some of the altitude off their kicks. That'd be perfect.
Yeah. We've got another comment. Gordon McCracken. Hello, Gordon, who we read out your comment earlier from our super secret Facebook page. He says, Bigger and Farrell wasn't much of a combo. Both just did their own thing. Be interesting to see if Russell and Farrell play together and what level of cohesion they can show. I mean, we joked about that, didn't we, John, that when Andy Farrell gets out of there, you know, Finn will have Owen on the Blue Smarties, full on kind of, you know, like almost like kind of like on speed running rings around the lamp, around the posts. No sure where he is, but that he will be. I mean, I think that's, you know, the 10 position, as much as people outside of Scotland think it's nailed down, I think we would say that it's not. And you almost wonder how that would go. I mean, we know how Greg Laidlaw and Finn Russell work together as the odd couple pairing of the straight-laced guy from Jedburgh and the manic guy, the manic former woodsman, you know, who throws ridiculous passes.
Stonemason.
Stonemason. That's what I meant. Same thing. Stone and wood, just it's a chisel.
We would get letters. I need to connect it.
But you know, we've seen that. I think that, you know, having somebody who's very focused and controlled either inside or outside of Finn can work. So it could be an interesting combination.
Yeah, I think it absolutely could be. And, you know, it is really interesting to see how these combinations are maybe going to start to pan out, and particularly in the backs, if they are given a platform to explore some of their maybe more creative side. Than having Gregor Townsend as attack coach is obviously a great start for that. It will be interesting to see, you know, obviously it all depends on that forward dominance, if the Lions can get any sort of parity up front, then, you know, guys like Russell might get a chance to go and make some magic happen. But otherwise, I think we are going to be playing 10-man rugby, and it's going to be ugly.
There was an article, Johnny, that in, I think it was, maybe in Rugby Pass or so, the Times, I think, where they talked to players that played against Owen Farrell in the Championship, talking about how much he talks and how he abuses his own players. And you wonder how, that's obviously the way he plays, obviously very focal, very passionate guy on the pitch. I think Alan Wynne-Jones has talked about the first time he played him, and he just kind of started screaming, come on, come at me, I'm going to take you. Alan Wynne-Jones, he bore down on him. How that kind of might work, whether or not that's going to grate with someone like Finn Russell, or whether it's something Finn Russell can shrug off and just accept, this is who this guy is out of me, I'm just going to tune him out, but we can work well together.
Yeah, I thought it was quite weird that he won the vote for the leadership group, because I'd seen the same thing and thought, there must be a lot of guys on that tour that respond to that. But there's some that you can see I don't think would. Like, I can't see Finn responded well to that at all. But yeah, you never know. Maybe he does. Maybe he does just block it out. Maybe he just goes, oh, yeah, well, watch this then.
He only got most of the votes because there's a good chunk of English players in the voting group, I would have thought, you know. Because I don't respond to it. I don't think Finn will respond to it. I think Tooney will not respond to it. I think Tooney's one of those people. I know Tooney has been interviewed and said he likes him and he thinks he's going to do a great job. But I think he is very set, likes to work to a set plan. Whereas even Dan Biggar now, who is meant to be the sure thing and meant to be very, very controlled, he was throwing two missed passes flat across to Tyburn and things like that, which is a very Tooney type of way to play in attack. So I think Farrell's going to have to shape up or ship out, really. And he's got, if he doesn't, there are plenty other players on the that have gone out with them that will match up with Finn Russell very, very well.
Yeah, I mean, is Alan McDonald suggesting the fact that Marcus Smith had a letter as the only thing close to a like-for-like replacement for Finn suggests Finn is seen as having a big role to play, surely? And I think there was that on, like, you could, like Craig said, John, you could see there were, that was a Gregor Townsend attack.
Yeah.
You know, of you know, we plan first couple of phases off a set move and then just play what's in front of you, lads.
when they were given the opportunity to do so, absolutely. And I was, Bigger, again, I'm a bit of a critic of Bigger, but I thought he was very, very good. He done a lot of very different things to maybe what we've seen from Dan Bigger in the past. I know he's certainly been playing in a different way at club level, which is obviously a positive. And as you say, he looked a bit more up for entertaining. He also set the tone. He was really energetic and tried to get them moving at a bit of pace, which was really good to see. And that to me suggests that, you know, there is a game plan there. And if you're looking for somebody to continue that, then, you know, Finn Russell definitely has a role to play. Will that be Bigger at 10, Russell at 12, though? Who knows?
Mm. We had a comment on the Facebook page from Jamie Govern, and I think it's a hands in the ruck, but we'll deal with it now because it's a Lions question. We're going to throw this to you, Johnny, as a fullback. Jamie says, the amount of pundits and journalists are writing off Hogg's Lions prospects, given he didn't start either the semi or the final for Exeter. Now, there was something I don't agree with Eddie Jones on much, but one of the things Eddie Jones has kind of famously said is that players don't get dropped. They're just, you know, you use players in different ways. And sometimes having a player on the bench who can come off the bench and make an impact, it's about using the full kind of 23 man on the day squad. So you don't necessarily pick your best 15 players to go out and play. You pick your best combinations and you pick your most impactful bench, I guess.
Yeah. And Hoggy, it was told that he wasn't trying hard enough in the week leading up to the semi. I don't think that a week of not trying and training 2 weeks before you go to the Lions tour makes you not one of the best fullbacks in the world anymore. I think that's maybe a bit of a stretch. The worst thing was that then the week leading up to the final, Rob Baxter came out and said, yeah, he's busted all week. He's done everything we've asked him to and more. It's lit a fire in him, the fact that I told him he wasn't trying hard enough and I benched him, and now he's ready to go, and then benched him again. Like, now I don't have the utmost respect in the world for Rob Baxter. In fact, I probably couldn't have much less if I tried, but I did think that was a bit sketch. And to be honest, I wouldn't read too much into it, because you're right, like, Jack Knoll's a great player. He's a Lion as well. Like, you can't forget that. So if he fit into the game plan better to be the starter and they thought Hoggy had more of an X factor off the bench, then that makes sense. And then on the other hand, I don't really care what Rob Baxter says as well. So
as coach 101 for me is, you don't make an example of one of your players who's doing badly in public. And that was going to be my hands in the ruck, was Rob Baxter out in public slating Hoggy for not trying hard enough. You go and you have a word with your player and you do what you want to do in private. But I thought that was that showed the character of the coach to come out and okay, fair enough, you'll be badgered by the press asking why is Hoggy not in the team. But I just thought that was absolutely just, that was a poor move.
Yeah, like you said, it doesn't take much, does it, for the answer to why is Hoggy not in the team? Because it, you know, because it fits our game plan to bring him off the bench after a certain period of time. That's all you need to say. You don't need to go into any further, do you?
You get more out of the player.
Yeah,
you get more out of the player if you know. Well, I, from what I can tell, and from my very basic experience, you get more out of the player having a word with them and talking to them one to one than letting the whole world know. And I thought it was just a bad move.
Well, yeah. Let's be honest, Stuart Hogg does have previous in not responding well to this sort of criticism in the past. Yes, he has grown significantly as a person and a player, but you do wonder, like, if he's sitting there going, I'm doing everything here, I've been brilliant all season for you, I've had a couple of dull weeks, but, you know, and you're publicly slating me, you do got to wonder if he's sitting there going, all right, maybe that contract extension, we'll see, mate.
I'm not sure Ulster could afford his wages these days, though.
Well, they did turn down Big Knacks, so I mean, they might have a wee space in their budget for him.
Yeah, maybe. I think any more on the Lions before we move on? No, all good. We'll take that one off the agenda. Right, Scotland's tour we could have a lovely chat this evening about Scotland Day versus England Day down at Doncaster, but the game was called off because coronavirus has ripped through the, there's like five of them gone down with coronavirus in Scotland camp. The camp has been disbanded. Everyone's been sent home isolated, including the coaches. You would hope, I think at this stage, they're still hopeful that the tour to Romania and Georgia will go ahead, John.
Yeah, they are still hopeful. But again, I think, maybe come on to, so Mark Dodson in the press today was saying that, it's a waiting game. It is a waiting game. They've done everything they can do. They followed all the guidance. That's why the camp's been disbanded. We've seen these camps where you stay in bubble, but it still finds a way. So they've done everything they can do, and let's hope it can go ahead. It would be a real shame for the guys involved if it couldn't. But ultimately, health is paramount, and we have to be mindful of that fact.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I enjoyed you describing coronavirus in the same terms as love. Like, coronavirus finds a way, and love finds a way.
Coronavirus finds a way. I'm sure there's a song there, boys.
Could we make a new Richard Curtis film, Coronavirus Actually?
Oh, so
we could definitely do three funerals and a wedding.
Can you do a wedding then?
I don't know, but it'd be a small one. Gordon McCracken again says, we've lost Finlay Christie. We haven't yet, Gordon. Let's not hold on to that until he's actually bloody capped. Let's not lose hope. But cancellation means Fraser Dingwall remains in our grasp. Yes, we can Gary Graham him. There you go. Cammy Redpath him, as the expression goes. You were mentioning Mark Dodson there, John. Scottish Rugby has unveiled its strategic approach for the next 3 years as the sport emerges from the COVID-19 pandemic, so says the press release. It's centred on three themes of well-being, women and winning, famously the three Ws. It sounds like something out of Alan Partridge's Bouncing Back. We are harsh on the SRU at times, and I think it's just, we're trying to keep everybody honest, I think, and we're critical friends, I think, is probably the most accurate description I think I could give to what we try to do here. We had a good chat about the Super Six the other week, didn't we, Craig? We had a good debate back and forward. I think we ended up deciding that the coverage was a good thing.
Yeah.
I've heard on the grapevine that Premier Sports actively sought out the programme rights for that and are interested in further programme rights for Scottish Rugby, which is a good thing. I think a
magazine programme would be fantastic for
John's not going to be involved after he absolutely slated them the other week, but the rest of us, we think the coverage is fantastic and we'd
absolutely
love to be involved.
Fabulous. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to stick to my Manscaped sponsorship. You guys can go off and see pastures new if you want. I know where my loyalties lie.
I suppose though, Johnny, that the focus is commendable because this idea of well-being, women, and winning, I suppose, is put in the terms of the success of the pro teams. It feels like there's a move to the focus being in the right places.
I think so. I think the things that they've picked out are really, really good, and I think that they will help the game. It's good to see that they've said they're going to commit funds to making the pro teams competitive, because at the end of the day, if you want to watch rugby in Scotland, you can go to, at the very most, 6 Scotland games a year, or you can now go to 9 home games of each pro team. So that's where the opportunity for people to get into consistently go to watch rugby comes from. It's from Glasgow and Edinburgh. And if we could put a bit of money into them doing well in this new tournament, I think it's something that's worth doing because it's going to get a bit more interest, and it maintains interest a bit longer because you've got, obviously, the full length of the season rather than 5 weeks of the Six Nations and 3 weeks of the Autumn Tests. You can hold people's attention for a bit longer, but to do that, you've got to have a good product. So putting the money in that, I think, is going to be really good. And obviously, it's about time that they committed to putting a decent bit of money behind the women's game as well, because that's been coming for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there's a suggestion, Craig, that certainly Mark Dodson did a press conference. I think if anyone wants to read it, there's 10 questions for Mark Dodson that's on the offside line, which is well worth reading. It covers quite a lot of ground. But from the women's side of things, there's a suggestion that they're exploring options for a professional setup in conjunction with the other unions, which I think we've talked about before on the podcast is can only be a good thing for women's rugby in Scotland.
Yeah, I'm just really pleased to see them go through the process of saying that they're going to take women's rugby seriously. We desperately need to bring our players up to pro standard and pay them. We also have to have a look at the way they capture players for the Scotland team, because it's very much based on just the Premiership, as in the Prem teams, I should say. It used to be very much they would come along to all the rugby clubs in the local across that have women's teams, and then say, see that, and then they'd have a word with the player that looks good on the field and say, you need to go and play for an Edinburgh team, or you need to go and play for this team, and that player would have to go and play. If you want to play for Scotland, they'd have to go and start playing for these higher level teams. They need to bring in. They have a slight setup in the girls' side of things with Caledonia and the regions, but they don't have it in the senior women's game at this moment in time. So it's very much you have to go and play for a Prem team, and then you're in the shop window for Scotland. So if they open it out a little bit, which they're trying to do at the moment, and they give a little bit more, they open up the funnel as such to capture more women players, they're going to get a higher level coming in through the Scotland team process, and then hopefully they'll get pro contracts. But I really do believe that there should be at least one pro women's team, whether it's in Edinburgh or Glasgow, playing in either the English Premiership setup that they have at the moment, and call it a UK-wide Premiership setup, something like that, to have save people like Jade Conkle having to go down to Harlequins and move so far away to look for a high level of rugby to make sure that that we're capturing them as much as we can. Sorry, it's a personal tirade there, but that's something that I believe a lot in.
Yeah, and John, it's interesting. I think it's interesting. I think that this idea of professional women's rugby, because for what a professional women's rugby players are paid is an utter pittance, and so it's that even though they may have a professional contract, they still have to supplement that. I think as Rona Lloyd has talked before on Twitter about the fact that a match appearance fee for a Scottish male international rugby player is three, four, five times as much as she will make in a year as a professional rugby player down at Loughborough Island.
Yeah, there is still a glaring inequality with regards to it. And obviously, we've all spoken at length on this podcast regarding our desire for the women's game to be better funded, to be essentially better marketed, to be, they use the term exploit the market. But it's more than that. It's about creating a real opportunity for Scottish rugby to kind of start to drive some success in the women's game. And if they invest properly, it'll be great to see, the next generation. Because we've all kind of looked on with pride at the internationals that we've got just now and have had over the last few years. And there's been some amazing players have come through the system. And the more that professionalism comes into it, the more chance you've got of developing these players and them becoming, player of the tournament at the Six Nations or competing with those English players who are fully professional. I think it's really, really positive. And me and Craig were talking beforehand that it's great to see a commitment to that, but let's see the colour of the money first.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
I just want to check before we move back to, I want to circle back to Edinburgh and Glasgow. Johnny, we've got a question from Bruce Aitchison here. He wants to know, has your laddie had his ollie yet?
Yeah, he got it after like maybe 48 hours of trying. I gave it to him, so he's fine.
That's a reference back to Dodmaster. We did that on Friday night to raise money for My Name is Doddy. We've had a tweet from the My Name is Doddy Foundation who've watched it back finally, and rather than suing us, have full-heartedly supported it, the efforts. So you can go.
I think the Border Press is going to talk about suing you, maybe.
We can run the story; it's their own fault.
Actually, yeah, it's actually more Bruce Easterton that they're going to be suing.
So if you go to justgiving.com/fundraising/Dodmaster, you can donate to, still donate there until the end of August. And we're slowly creeping up towards the 4,000 mark. If we can raise £4,000 by the end of August, that'll be absolutely fantastic. In terms of the pro teams then, I kind of want to circle back to that a little bit. John, I'll come to you. There is an element, I think, that we get the complaint every year, don't we, that Murrayfield, where are all these fans that turn up to Murrayfield every year for the Scotland games? Where are they every week for Glasgow and Edinburgh? And the answer is they're all watching club rugby because they've no bloody interest in pro rugby during the rest of the year, is the answer for most of them, because that's the way a lot of the tickets are sold. So I suppose part of the challenge for the SRU is how do you get people that are invested in their clubs, who are maybe sceptical about Scotland having professional teams in the first place, how do you get them to invest in Glasgow and Edinburgh teams that, you know, Glasgow won the Pro 12 once and occasionally they reach the playoff finals. Edinburgh sometimes have a bit of luck in Europe, but generally we've got two middling to average pro teams, if we're honest. How, you know, the only way to, I suppose, get people who only are interested in club rugby to be interested in pro rugby is if our teams are successful consistently.
Yeah, no, I think there's a twofold thing there. You're absolutely right. The quickest way to get people involved in the pro club game, as you saw with Glasgow went from having 1,000 men in a dug at their games to regularly not having, you know, I think they sold out 15 or 16 consecutive home games at Scotstoun. And there was clamours for more. We needed more space at Scotstoun. We needed more. It's probably not going to be the case. Actually, they've probably reached a bit of a cap. But success gets people involved. People like to come along and see a winning team. The other part of it, though, and this is really, really important for me, is we need to be seeing those players from the club game making their way into the pro teams. We need to be, you know, there's nothing quite beats that pride that people see. You know, you guys are all involved in clubs that have had Scotland internationals. Nothing beats that pride in seeing someone go from being a colt, being a mini, all the way up to playing at Glasgow, playing at Edinburgh, playing for Scotland. So that's where, and we talked about the Super Six, that's where there has to be, again, that really has to be utilised properly, because it's a real opportunity to get people invested in that pathway that they aren't invested in just now.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because we've got Johnny and Craig tonight, and I know, Craig, you might not see the same link with the Glasgow, but how are Fife contingent, Johnny, because you're a Glasgow fan, within the how are Fife contingent, they've come through to Glasgow, there must be a real connection there for you personally to see the Horns, to see Chris Fusaro playing professional, have come through the Howe system into Glasgow, as opposed to somebody, you know, being picked up at the age of three, taken off to private school and appear, pop out an academy. You know, there's no romance in that, is there, I guess?
Yeah, no, it's huge. And John's absolutely right. That's how you get people interested. Because if you can go down to Scotstoun or go down to Murrayfield and say, like, and I do, I've taken my son to watch Glasgow and we watch Pete and George play and we watch Fuzzy play and he'll be at how many's this year. And I sit there and say, he plays for the same team as you. He played for the same team as you. He came from your team. He comes from you and Dad's team. And it's like, if you can get people interested in that, that's how you build a connection. You build a connection through the clubs, through the pro teams. And it's being able to see that there's a route to go from your club to a Super Six team, to Glasgow, to Edinburgh, to Scotland. And it's... you've got to get that sort of seamless transition, and that's how you get people interested in all levels. And it could work backwards as well. Like, there's people around here who maybe haven't been massively interested in the club game who will see George Horn And if you're maybe all sitting down the pub, you can go, oh, George Horney used to play for Howe. And now all of a sudden, they were previously only interested in Scotland. Now they're interested in the club team. Then it doesn't have to be linear. You can go interested in your club, interested in your pro team, interested in Scotland. Or you can go interested in Scotland, find out somebody played for your club there. Then you get interested in Glasgow Redbirds after that. It's just, it's working out a way of tying it all together so that you can, so you know what's happening at all the levels.
I mean, Craig, New Zealand have always been very good at that. And I think it's something, Jim, to kind of like be the old guy at the back of the bar, drunk and kind of like talking about the old days. But it's something Jim Telfer advocated for, was this, to have that connection between the clubs and the regions and the Super Six teams. It kind of, that's the New Zealand way, is everyone goes back to the club. I mean, Dan Carter went back and played for his club at the end of his career. You know, it was the equivalent of going back to Howe Fife or Berwick to play at 10 at the end, you know, at the age of 38 or whatever he is.
Yeah, that's true. But then in New Zealand, rugby is the game, whereas we are competing with football. And we are a minority sport in Scotland, although we're growing. So it is a difficult situation. I know it's throwing money away, but it's one of the biggest things that I thought Edinburgh had a finger on was they used to do a season ticket for £50 for under 16s, and they also, if you brought your child, you know, for an adult paying, you could have a free child's ticket when we're in Murrayfield, you know, when we're rattling around inside Murrayfield, and that is bringing. You know, the only way you're going to build these crowds, you're going to build these teams, is getting people down to watch it live. Because fair enough, it's fantastic to have all this coverage, including the Super Six on TV. But a lot of that is lending itself to somebody sitting with a carry out from a local shop, drinking a beer, watching their team on the TV, rather than actually physically going down to the park to watch them. So I think it has to be hand in hand. But I agree with both John and Johnny regarding that. You know, we need to see that link. The link. We are a very, very proud team at the Howe Fife. In fact, I think we've got a link to Jamie Ritchie. He played for a year for us when he was just coming out of Strathallan School. So, you know, we try to maybe I don't know we try to put our arm around a few Scotland players, but but we have a proud link, and that is one thing. I think if you go down to Kelso, you go into Jed, you go into Dundee High, they all have their links to Scottish rugby. In the past, what we need to ensure that they have their links to Scottish rugby in the future.
Yeah, and I think that's it, because you think about all the shirts that are on the wall and all these clubs. You know, I remember as a youngster, you'd go to every club. Every club had inter-district shirts. They had Scottish rugby, you know, international shirts, A-level at full international level. And it's inspiring, I think, for young players to see that. And you wonder how many now have that gap, John, between... You know, maybe the 2000s, maybe the, you know, the early 2000s, there might be a few shirts on the wall, but whether there's still shirts on the wall, because a lot of the players don't have that link back.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's probably something that's maybe started to creep out a wee bit of rugby in Scotland. And I think there's a massive opportunity there to kind of revitalise that, re-engage that, but you know, ultimately, it all comes down to money, and if it has to be investment, and it has to be investment at grassroots, has to be investment all the way through the pathway system, the academies, everything. We're getting there. We are actually starting to get there. You know, 20 odd years later, professionalism, we're finally cracked it a wee bit, but we need more money involved. It's always going to be about money, and only then will you start to see those grassroots clubs able to keep hold of those guys who are going to play internationally, who are going to go on to represent the pro clubs. Because it's fine and well to say, oh, they played here when they were five, they played here when they were seven, but it's seeing them as an under 16, you know, watching, we all remember the footage of watching a young Stuart Hogg tearing it up down in the Borders with his Bebo haircut. And there's a connection there that gets lost if they go off to an academy.
And I genuinely cannot say about Stuart Hogg, can he do it on a wet night at Berwick, because he's played in the Berwick Sevens.
There you go. See?
This footage of him, like you said, his Bebo haircut, 16 playing in the Berwick Sevens.
I'd tearing it up as well. He was, I believe he was playing 10, though, which I
have. Yeah. Any more on the SIU 10 questions? Do you want to touch on Super 8, John, or are we going to leave that?
No, I noted that. That's an interesting commitment.
If Glasgow wanted a franchise, I'm sure we'd fund one. I think was I might be paraphrasing there.
That seems to be the suggestion, yes. I mean, I particularly liked that, I'm just pulling it up just now, he indicated, obviously, Super 8 would be the start. But he then goes on to list, we would be looking at, you know, a franchise in Aberdeen, a franchise in Dundee, or Glasgow.
Famously, that famous conurbation of Glasdee.
Yeah. I mean,
hang on, I don't know what you're moaning about. You've got air. You should be happy with air. It's so close to Glasgow. You should just be that way. That.
I mean, yeah. It absolutely is. Yeah, it's a beautiful drive down the motorway to go and hang out down in deepest, darkest Ayrshire.
Yeah. Okay. Any other news from anybody before we go and do Hands in the Ruck? No? Good. Yeah. Let's do Hands in the Ruck then. Hands in the Ruck. Who has got the hands in the ruck? Hands in the ruck. Hands in the ruck. Who has got the hands in the ruck? Yes, it's Hands in the Ruck time or any other business section of the podcast. Andy Lone says, great to see Tim Swinson win player of the season at Saracens. Tim Swinson, of course, part of the group of players that went out drinking in London and had an entire international game of rugby cancelled. But still, player of the season. That is fairly exciting, Johnny, that Tim Swinson, you know, what is Tim Swinson now, 58?
Yeah, you forget how many Scottish players there are at Saracens until they just keep popping up.
Now, Callum Hunt-Hill.
Yeah.
And there was highlights of this. It must be the second leg of the championship final. And it said, Duncan Taylor sets up Sean Maitland for a great try for Saracens. I was like, jeez, I forgot about that. Pair of them.
Did you see Tim Swinson's kick?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, obviously he got fined for that afterwards. But what a strike of the ball. A push. If Glasgow were needing a 10, then there would be a place for him there. That was spectacular. And I love that he's been tearing it up this season, having retired for 2 days, which was quite galling, actually, as a Glasgow fan.
Oh, I've retired. Oh, well, we've been relegated to the Championship and there's no salary cap here. All right, well, I'll leave you then.
He's still working as a union rep as well. That's good going.
Is he not the RPA or the Scottish RPA chairman or something? Or he's heavily involved
in the Scottish Players Association, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. John, your hands in the ruck while I dig some out from social media.
Yeah, so I think obviously we're on a Lions show. So thinking about the Lions, and I'm sure many people have touched on this, but the thermonuclear take that resulted from Adam Beard being called up in place of Alwyn Jones and Josh Navidi being called up to replace Tipperick. It was really interesting to see the vitriol that immediately came out and was thrown at these guys. Look, let's consider them in separate ways. Josh Navidi is a very, very talented rugby player. He's also a 7. Tipperick was a 7. Tipperick needs to be replaced. Who's next off the rank? Probably Navidi, actually. So no issues there. People then have an issue with Adam Beard because they're like, oh, he doesn't even get into Wales team, and he's this. People, he does. He actually does. He plays for Wales, and you know, Gatland knows him, so that helps. And you're looking for. People have very, very conveniently forgotten the whole ethos of the squad. When it was announced, we all went, really? And there was a lot of shocks in there, but it's because it's a squad designed for a game plan. And Adam Beard is coming back in and he's going to be part of that game plan. It's not about like, oh, the next off the rank is, you know, this player or that player. It's about who suits the game plan best, and they've adjudged that that's going to be Weird. So, no issue for me.
I think it's a ZZ Top problem in that Adam Beard does not have a beard, but Jake Ball has a beard. So people think that Jake Ball has been called up.
This is true. And that would be problematic. But no, I mean, Beard's a decent player. He's not going to trouble the test team, let's be honest, right? He's there as a dirt tracker at best, and he'll hold some tackle bags, but he'll act as opposition for those players who are the test players. He's been picked for a reason. So let's go away from the Johnny Gray's been doing this and doing that. Yeah, I would love to see Johnny Gray get called up, but he didn't suit what they were looking for. So these things happen.
Yeah. Johnny,
we played a team that drove a 35-metre maul from open play in the World Cup 2 years ago. Adam Beard has got levers, the likes of which I don't think I've rarely ever seen. He is one of the most nuisance players at mauls and lineouts in the world, probably. So when you see him get called up, okay, initially a lot of people are saying, oh, well, what about James Ryan? Well, he's injured for a start.
Yep.
What about Johnny Gray? What about this player? What about that player? If you look at what Adam Beard's skill set actually is and what he's really, really good at, which is making a nuisance of himself in lineouts and mauls, and then look at South Africa, of course you're going to take Adam Beard. It's basically a no-brainer.
Yeah. And we can make him a beard out of Josh Navidi's hair, because you know he needs a haircut. stop looking like someone who's just left school and going around Fiji in a gap year.
I think it looks like he's just crawled out of a tunnel underneath the bypass that they were. Yeah.
God, I sound old like my dad. My goodness.
Yeah, it's interesting though. Like again, we talked before about people's reactions to things being almost maybe nationality driven, and there has been an extreme reaction to this because it's two Welsh players replacing two Welsh players. I think we just need to really park that part of it, because this is a squad now. This is who they've went with, and they were the next best picks.
Yep, I think that's I think we'd all agree with that. Johnny, your hands in the ruck.
People complaining that they're bored of hearing about Exeter Chiefs, right? And I get it. I sympathise with it because I'm bored of saying it. If you think this is boring, try having your culture used as a cartoon mascot for 100 years. That's boring. And if we stop talking about it, it starts to go away. So I'm going to continue every time Exeter comes up, every time they lose a final, every time they win a final, every time BT tweets how great the Tomahawk Chop is, I'm going to talk about it every time. And I'm sorry you're bored of it. I'm bored of saying it, but the only way that it's going to go away is if it stays in the conscious. That's the only way to do it.
But isn't it racist, Johnny, to hand out Guinness hats on person practice day? And that's the same thing, isn't it? Lucky Charms, but when will they cancel the leprechaun on Lucky Charms boxes?
Where does it end?
Where does it end? Cancel Lucky Charms.
I'm already starting that Twitter page right now, guys.
when you start cancelling targeting leprechauns as well, Johnny McGinty, then you can get outraged about people appropriating First Nations imagery. No, I think it is, and I know people get. I think we've probably lost. It's fair to say we've probably lost some listeners on this podcast when you know over some of the more woke content that we do. And you know, I don't really care, to be honest, because if people don't want to listen to it, then that's their choice, and that's how freedom of expression works. If you don't listen to us, you can walk, and we probably are speaking to a bit of an echo chamber. But I think on the other hand, I've also heard from people who've listened to this podcast and listened to other podcasts who have very slowly been talked around. And from a personal experience, and, you know, just kind of thinking about this with the football being back on the telly, I've stood in Hampden and I've sung the Jimmy Hill song. And I knew at the time that I was singing the Jimmy Hill song that it was wrong to sing the Jimmy Hill song, but I still sang it because every around me was it, and, you know, you feel part of the crowd. I wouldn't sing it now. And I knew at the time it was wrong to sing it. And I know now it was wrong to sing it. There was probably a point in the past where I thought it was okay and quite funny to sing it. but you learn and you move on and you grow as a person, and that's how it works. And I think unless we continually have these conversations, you don't challenge your own thinking, and you don't challenge other people's thinking as well.
It has to be a pronged attack, and I think we're at the stage of we need to bring attention to the Exeter for Change group, and we need to support them, but they also need to start talking about why are the RFU playing a tomahawk chop at full chat in Twickenham, because they wouldn't. There are many other things they wouldn't play at Twickenham, and I think it's absolutely. It was. I lost a bit of it last week regarding this when we're talking about the semi final, but again, we're seeing this boys club blazer attitude that is just needing knocked on the head, and younger people. And if I can do anything, is encourage more people to get involved in the administration side of rugby teams, rugby clubs, so they can then get into the SRU, the RFU, the IRFU, and make a change, because it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, that kind of brings me onto my hands in the ruck. There was a report that was out this week by, it's called the Five Councils Report, and it was UK Sport, Sport England, Sport Scotland, Sport Wales, and Sport Northern Ireland came together in September 2020, and they wanted to try and tackle racism and racial equality in sport and try and kind of look into it. And they commissioned two bits of work. So one was analysis of lived experiences, and I can encourage everybody to read this on the Sport Scotland website, and it is well worth a read, because there are huge problems within sport in Scotland, and rugby doesn't, no one sport gets singled out in this, but I think when you apply it to Scottish rugby and the structures that they're in, exactly what you were saying, Craig, about who's involved in the administration of the sport, rugby absolutely fits within the problems that the reports identify and the people within the reports are talking about. I mean, in the Scottish report, you've got people talking about, the socioeconomic criteria that you've got somebody talking about how they used to run free sessions that were always really popular, and people would come along to these free sessions, and they worked really well. And the moment they started charging £3 a week, two people turned up one week. You've got the people talk about there'd be no representation for them within the sport at a coaching level. They don't see themselves reflected in the players that are playing. They don't see themselves reflected in the structures. Now, you look at the SRU Council and you look at the SRU, the council and the name's going to come to me in a minute. There's the SRU Council and then there's the other one, the SRU Board. You look at that, it's all old white men and a couple of women. Right. So you tell somebody that's, maybe even you tell a woman to get involved. I mean, it was fantastic that we had, the first female, president of the SRU. That was a great breakthrough for Scottish rugby. But I don't see that carrying through. That feels like a one-off, because there's only two or three involved in the council and the board now. And you look at the profile of the board and it's all white in Scottish rugby. And the council particularly is all old white men and a few women. And you think, well, that's because at the administration level in Scottish rugby, it's all old white men. And maybe the old white men are the only guys that got the time to dedicate to do it. Or maybe it's that, like you said, Craig, more young people need to get involved. But that in itself is a challenge. And how inviting, I think Scottish rugby needs to reflect on how inviting are we to ethnic minorities in Scotland. How easy is it for them to come along to a club and feel welcome and feel part of it? We've seen the problems before in Scottish rugby with racial abuse. It's been widely reported that that's been an issue when teams have gone and played away fixtures. There've been guys quite like rightly, reprimanded for it. And then the report talks about, whether or not that's enough though, whether or not the bans are enough, whether or not the sanctions are enough, because there's always an excuse, isn't there? All the reports of it is always, I didn't mean it was in the heat of the moment. And, you think about how the person that's subject to that, or even somebody that's looking in outside inward to Scottish sport, feels about that reaction of, oh, we've reduced it because it was out of character, or
There's too much. Oh, it was changing room chat. It was banter. It was this. It was that. Going back to your original point of board members, how do the board members on Scottish Rugby and get themselves appointed onto that board? By going around all the rugby clubs and gaining support from other old white men in blazers. And so those are the things. These things are not going to change. Now, the RFU have supposedly put things in place with bringing in Hugo Monnier and his group to try and put a case together and to try and change from within. But that, you know, that needs, we need to be doing that, not just because someone is making a huge point on social media and on television and et cetera within the media. We need to be looking for real people. And it goes back to the whole thing that John and Keith Russell, the points that were made in the Keith Russell issue that we had, etc. We're not looking at a diverse group of the Scottish public to be involved in rugby clubs. It's still looked upon as, you know, up at the Howe of Fife, it's looked upon as a farmers' club. It's all farmers that are involved in the club. Now we've got players coming from, you know, for example, we've got the women's team that has been put together from many different backgrounds. We've got the local army base. We have a lot of players who come from that are a great mix of different races and different playing skills, and we need to learn to embrace that. And to really push that. It's no longer going to be you have to go and get a scholarship from any young person who is not wealthy has to get a scholarship to a posh school to become a good rugby player.
Yeah, there's an interesting quote. This is a young sports participant and sports panel representative said, "Everyone will say I'm happy to be more inclusive, but they generally don't understand why they aren't inclusive, and that's where the problem lies." And I think it comes back to what we were saying about, you know, earlier, John, when we were talking about this during the Autumn Nations test, where it's all very well to stand there, everyone stand quiet with a head bowed, to take a moment to say racism is bad. But unless you're actually doing something tangible to tackle racism within sport and inequality within the sport of rugby in Scotland, then it's a hollow gesture. Because I looked at the SRU website again today, and, you know, I wrote an article on the blog a few months ago about this issue, about how Scottish rugby needs to do more. And at that point, I looked at the SI have got tackling equalities plan that runs to 2020. So it's already out of date. And it said, "We are committed to providing regular updates on this. The last update was from quarter two of 2018. So they've had, you know, the Black Lives Matter issues were raised, you know, early 2020. Any organization, most organizations by now have caught up to that. And like I said, like Craig was saying, the RFU have done stuff, have got people on board. This is an issue that, I mean, hopefully the Sports Scotland report will force the SRU to engage with it, John, because that's where a lot of the funding comes for rugby. And you would imagine now Sports Scotland are going to say, "We want you to demonstrate that you are doing something now before we will give you anything or before we work with you."
Yeah, that's absolutely how it should be. There needs to be accountability. And, you know, we've had people mention in the past as well, we are aware that it's interesting that there's four white, mostly bald guys sitting on a podcast chatting about rugby. And do you know what that is? We are a bit of a microcosm of what the diversity in rugby looks like. And it doesn't mean that we're going to stop campaigning and stop talking about diversity. And people can criticise and say, "Well, you're four white guys, what do you know?" Well, we know that it's wrong that it's four white guys sitting here talking about this. There should be a much more diverse fan base, and we need to encourage that, and we need people to be involved. And that starts all the way down at that club level. It starts with that welcome, that walk through the door, that knowing that you're going to be safe walking through the door. And people don't feel that, and we need to get that back. If we're going to do it, you know, if there's money involved, or, you know, however we incentivize it, that's fine, but it has to be tangible action, real action, and it has to start now. It has to start tonight when people go into the rugby club tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon or whenever. It has to start now.
Yeah, Craig, have we done your hands in the rock already? Have we covered it?
Well, yeah, because I've got two frivolous hands in the ruck now, because the first one is Johnny McGinty stealing my hands in the ruck. And the second one is, as we're going into a new season, and it's more of an appeal from me, to be perfectly honest. As we're going into a new season in the next couple of months, can we sort out the sizing on Macron's rugby gear? Because it's absolutely bloody ridiculous. I'm sorry, when I'm looking at 5XL, I'm thinking that's going to drown me, and then I have to take it back. It's ridiculous. Johnny McGinty would fit into a 5XL just for Macron, and he's 12 ply a week. It's ridiculous, and we need to. I'm sorry, but it's fattest, and I don't like it. We need to start a revolution from within.
So you have sizes for props.
Yeah,
a separate section of the shop.
Well, we've got salad for props, and that's chips. So we've got. Why can't we have rugby gear for props?
It seems quite perverse, doesn't it, that they charge more for the player fit tops? It's like I'm paying more to look worse. Why? Why would I go down that route?
Ridiculous.
I think, do you know what? It's the likes of Alan Dell that have ruined props, Craig.
Oh yeah.
Nobody deserves to be that
beautiful
thin
prop I've ever seen him. In fact, even Rory, mind you, there's two props that have surprised me. Rory Sutherland is looking absolutely fabulous, I have to say, in a Lions top. Yeah, absolutely. And then all of a sudden, I then saw Xander Fagerson and his budgie smugglers, and that's just ridiculous. He needs to cover that up.
He's what we call an old school prop.
That's a proper prop. Yeah, absolutely.
It's telling, isn't it, that you had in previous Scotland squads, you had Alan Dell and Gordon Reid playing the same position. And comparators should not be drawn.
I tell you, Alan Dell was a beautiful, is a beautiful
He's
man.
He's a beautiful man, I know.
Yeah. Mind you, that doesn't hold a candle to Ross Ford.
Right. He said with such passion, Craig.
We're at an hour and a half now, guys. Does anyone want to bring in the elephant in the room / beer queue?
Who?
The beer queue. The money queue.
This is the next one. Here we go. Right. So, hands in the ruck from Alan McDonald. He's listened to that. I didn't forget Alan. Johnny's got views on this. He's going to lose some listeners. Alan says, entitled crud biscuits moaning about not being able to get a beer at Murrayfield at the price paid for a ticket. Here's a newsflash, sponge brains. The price of a ticket is for the game. You choose to pay it, and we're crowing about winning the draw. If queuing for a beer ruins your experience of a first game at Murrayfield post-lockdown while seeing the Lions on home soil, maybe you need to examine your relationship with alcohol. Alan did say he was heading to work tomorrow, so maybe didn't have a clear head. Johnny, you engaged with this discussion with Alan. I think it was fairly friendly. You were at the match. What's your take on this?
To be honest, I think exactly the fact that it is the Lions is something you kind of have to take into account here, because as it stands at the moment, that was a friendly on Saturday. We don't even know if they're going to get a cap for it.
They're not.
It would be a little bit different at the Six Nations, and it is annoying at the Six Nations. And I missed the first 10 minutes or so on Saturday. I missed Alan Wynne's injury because I was queuing for a beer. A Six Nations game, I probably wouldn't have done that. But outside of the Barbarians, the Lions is a team more than any other that's about the whole experience. So I got accused on Twitter the other week of not understanding the spirit of the Lions. But I know this much about the Lions is that the whole idea of the Lions is that they are a touring team. You get your chance once every 4 years to go halfway around the world with them, put on some colonially questionable costumes, go on the beers for a few weeks, make some noise at the tests. And as far as I understood it, the idea was to bring a bit of that atmosphere to Murrayfield on Saturday to people who don't have the opportunity to spend 15 grand going to South Africa for a month or whatever. So I'd say at that game, more than probably most other games at Murrayfield, being able to get a couple of beers and soak up the atmosphere and stuff is part of the experience. That's what we were going for. We were going to watch a tour team play an exhibition game, and it's about more than just the game. It's about enjoying yourself, there was loads of people in costumes there. They made a big deal when we got our emails about our tickets saying we've got 3 fan villages, we've got 25 food outlets, we've got bars. They named the drink suppliers by name, and that was not cheap. I can guarantee you that. So we had an email about the London Pride Bar and the whatever it was, Gin Company Bar. So they'd advertised that as part of the experience, and it's an essential part of the Lions experience. So I think people are within their right to say this isn't what we expected. And we'd invited people from all 4 unions to come to Murrayfield for this Lions experience, and we dropped the ball big time by making it the way it was, I think.
Yeah, I can understand. I can understand Alan's point, but it also seems to come to me from that. And it's not just Alan's complaint about it. There's been a few people have raised this point. It comes from, or seems to come from, the same place as people who complain about people who getting up in the middle of matches to go for a beer. It's like, you're at the rugby, people want to go and drink beer. And, you know, I think if you're that focused on a rugby match, watch it from home on the telly. Most people who go to watch live rugby are there for the, like Johnny said, it's the day experience, the day you get to soak up the atmosphere. And part of that is, you know, middle of the game, things, you know, the game's a little bit dull. I am going to get up and go and walk and get around in because nothing's happening. I sat through that 9-9 draw between England and Scotland at Murrayfield. And I, you know, we all got up a fair few times to go and get some drinks.
I've done that as well, even when it was Carling they were serving in plastic bottles. I had to drink that. The best thing they had was the red wine with the lids on it. That was quite good.
I was a fan of the plastic bottles. I thought that was a decent, and I know it's not environmentally friendly and stuff, but it makes it easier to not spill everywhere.
Well, I don't mind that. It's just it was Carling.
My dad was a big fan of the red wine technique because I think he's looking at the percentage to pounds ratio.
You've said
amount of liquid you've got to consume. I think, you know, it's a sensible approach. But no, I think, you know, I can understand people are frustrated that they didn't win the ballot, but I think everyone knew they were taking a risk when they bought the tickets and went in for them. It's different to people who maybe have, you know, mobility issues, who were stuck up in the gods, who, you know, needed a pitch side seat. But I agree. I'm with you, Johnny. I think if you go to the rugby and you go to any rugby match at club level or pro, Super 6, pro level, whatever, you're going for the experience. And part of that is, you know, mid-game, I'm going to get up and I'm going to need the toilet. I'm going to get up and I'm going to go and get a beer because that's what I'm there to do. I'm there to enjoy myself. I'm not there to sit and analyse a rugby game play for play and sit and watch it play for play. I want to do that. I'll sit and watch it on the telly and I'll pause, rewind, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
And I think some people seem to suggest that, especially because it was the Lions, it should have been more reverence and you should have been sitting there watching the whole thing. And I personally think because it was the Lions, it should have been more like an experience because that's what the Lions is. Yeah. Outside of sitting for an actual test in Joburg or Auckland or whatever, if you're with the Lions, you're with the Lions for getting a couple of beers, getting your costume on, wearing a questionable pith helmet, whatever you want to do. So I'd say rather than the fact it was the Lions meaning you should have spent more time in your seat, I think the fact it was the Lions means you probably should have spent less. That's not what you're there for a Lions tour game.
Yeah. Alan McDonald just says, is it obvious I'm usually driving when I'm at Murrayfield? Yes, Alan, it is. I think that's it for this week then. I think we've covered everything off. Ticked off all the items on this week's agenda, and we've covered all the hands and the rucks that we've had. We'll be back next week. There's a game on Saturday, a Lions game on Saturday. So
The Lions v. the Lions,
yep. So we'll be, if that goes ahead, we'll be back to cover that on Wednesday, pick up on other bits and bobs of news. We'll release details of when we're doing our best ever Scottish Lions team, probably towards the end of July, I'd imagine, when the tests are starting. For the moment, though, it is goodbye from me and goodbye from Johnny, Craig, and John.
Goodbye, folks.